Good evening, Mr. Hornby. It's an age since I saw you last. Well, how have you been?
It is a very long time, and I am glad to say that I have kept very well, and I hope you've kept well, too.
Yes, I'm quite well, thank you. When did I see you last? About 10 years ago, was it?
Yes. This is my second visit to Japan since the war, and I came here about 10 years ago for a conference on the teaching of English with Dr. Fries.
Yes.
And we had many lectures, and after the conference, we traveled about a bit in Japan.
Yes. So this is your second visit to Japan since the war, isn't it?
Yes, this is the second visit, and I'm very happy to be here again to meet so many old friends.
We are very happy, too. What is the purpose of your visit to Japan this time?
Well, my publisher in London, the publisher of the Oxford University Press, suggested I might like to come to Japan for British Week.
Yes.
And I'm sure you all know about British Week. I see the Union Jack flying everywhere in Tokyo.
Yes.
And so I was very happy to come, and I shall stay after the week and perhaps do some work with my publishers here.
So how long are you going to stay here after this festival?
Until the end of October.
Until the end of October,
yes.
I see. Well, since your arrival in Japan, have you noticed anything different from your last visit?
Well, I have been here only 3 or 4 days so far, but going about Tokyo, I see that everything is getting bigger and bigger.
Yes.
I'm not sure that it's getting better and better, because the traffic and noise seems to be so very great these days. I like a quiet life in the country.
Yes, I do.
But Tokyo is a very fine city, of course, and I have noticed all the big buildings that were put up for the Olympic Games and the new highways, the superhighways. Those are all new since I was here last.
Yeah. But even those highways are congested every day from morning till night. Well, when did you come to Japan for the first time? I mean, before the war.
Oh, that was in 1924. That was the year after the Great Earthquake.
Yes. And to where? Not directly to Tokyo.
No, I had recently taken my degree from the University of London, and the appointments board of the university one day informed me that there was a Japanese gentleman in London who wanted somebody to go to Japan.
Yes.
And I met Professor Watanabe of the Oita Koto Shogyo.
Yes.
And he suggested I might go there for a 3-year period, and I was very much interested in this idea of coming to Japan, a very romantic country to a young man.
Yes.
So I accepted for 3 years.
Oh, I see.
But instead of staying 3 years, I stayed very, very many more years. Because I liked Japan so much.
How old were you at that time, may I ask?
I was 26 when I first came out.
26, So he's after graduating from the London University.
Yes.
I see.
Yes, I was late graduating because I had been in the Navy during the war.
Oh, yes.
So I entered the university rather later than usual.
Mm-hmm. How did you find the students of Oita Higher Commercial School in those days?
Well, I was rather surprised when I first met my students because I had been asked to come to Japan to teach English literature.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got to the college, I found my students were reading Thackeray and Shakespeare and apparently with great understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But to my dismay, they couldn't speak English very well.
No.
They could read, but they couldn't speak.
Yes.
So I had quite a surprise, and after a few months, I decided that my main work ought to be teaching language and not literature.
Mm-hmm.
And so my interest became linguistic, not literary. And I think ever after that, I was much more interested in teaching language and leaving literature to my Japanese colleagues, who did it very well, of course.
What do you mean most of the students hardly understood your lecture in those days?
Not unless I spoke very, very slowly and carefully.
And they couldn't make themselves understood in English.
They could ask questions, yes, but they asked the wrong questions. They would say, for example, where went you yesterday instead of where did you go?
I see.
Well, now that is a very bad error for somebody who can read Shakespeare.
Not much improvement, even now, I'm afraid.
Oh, I'm sure there must be.
Yeah. Well, what do you remember most vividly about Oita?
Well, Oita was not a very interesting or exciting town to live in itself, but everybody was very kind to be there.
Yes.
But I loved Kyushu, of course. Mm-hmm. I used to go to Beppu, and for a while I lived in Beppu.
Uh-huh.
And my wife and I used to travel in Kyushu. We went to the Aso district, climbed Aso. Used to go to a beautiful valley called Yabake every autumn.
Oh, Yabake, very famous, yes.
So we enjoyed Kyushu.
Uh-huh. Do you like hot springs, sir?
Oh, very much indeed. Uh-huh. We went to hot spring resorts quite a lot.
Is it about an hour ride or 30-minute ride from Oita to Beppu?
Yes. In those days, there was an electric tramway between the two towns.
Electric tramway?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I expect now you've got something faster.
Well, how did you come to know Dr. Palmer, the first director of the Institute for Research in English Teaching?
Well, while I was teaching in Oita, of course, I sometimes came to Turkey on visits, and I spent my summers in Karawazawa, and I think I met him during that period because, well, British people in Tokyo usually did meet.
Yeah.
And when I met him, I became interested in his work. I joined the Institute, became a member, and corresponded with him about problems I had. And in the end, he asked me to cooperate with him, and I used to write occasional articles for his bulletin while I was still in Oita.
Yeah. In those days, didn't you have some foreign teachers' conference, annual foreign teachers' conference in Tokyo?
Yes, there was an Association of Foreign Teachers of English.
Yes.
And we used to meet occasionally
and
had our meetings in Tokyo.
And who was the director, the president of the Foreign Teachers Association?
I forget who it was now. It was Mr. Gauntlet.
Gauntlet.
Mr. Gauntlet. Not the young Gauntlet who is in Tokyo now.
Oh,
his father.
His father.
Yes, I think it was his father.
He's dead, but his son is still alive.
Yes. Oh, I remember
Kieran Strong.
Mr. Gauntlet Sr. very well.
Yeah.
He was a Welshman, I think.
Yes. when you came up to Tokyo from Oita in 1936, did you come at the invitation of Dr. Palmer or at the Tokyo School of Foreign Languages or Tokyo Higher Normal School?
Well, I think it was one of those Japanese-style arrangements. Dr. Palmer wanted me to come to Tokyo to help him. Well, he couldn't invite me to those schools, but he suggested to the authorities in these two schools that they might invite me, and they very kindly cooperated with his wishes and invited me to join the staff.
I see. You were a full-time teacher in both schools, so Geiger was a full-time teacher, and the Higher Normal School was part-time?
Yes, that's right.
And what was your position at the Institute? I mean, what did you do there, chiefly?
Well, when I first came to Tokyo, of course, Dr. Palmer was still the director, and I was helping him with research work. We did a lot of research work on collocations, vocabulary control, and things of that sort, and I helped him. I was a research associate.
Yes, I see. Can you tell me something interesting about your work while you were with the Institute?
Well, the research work was routine work. For example, the Ford Foundation sent over a lot of money for research work and collocations. And Palmer was very interested in everything concerned with vocabulary control, and then collocations, that is, comings together of words like in order to, that's a collocation.
Yes.
And nobody apparently had listed all the collocations in English. It's not quite the same thing as an idiom.
Mm-hmm.
If you say raining cats and dogs, that's an idiom.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you don't use it because it's not a very good one. But there are other phrases, verbal phrases, all sorts of things, prepositional phrases.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody had collected them, so we combed the Shorter Oxford Dictionary in two huge volumes, a very large Webster and for American collocations. We put all these things on cards and then put them into order. And that led to the publication of the collocation report. Well, that was the kind of work we did. Not exactly exciting, but I hope it was useful.
Mm-hmm. Was it published by the Institute or by some other publishing company?
It was published by Kitaksha for the Institute. Yes, the Kitaksha used to publish Institute work.
And one of the results is the compilation of that dictionary, I think. With whom did you compile that unique and now world-famous learner's dictionary?
I did most of the work, and it was my conception, I think. I felt that there was a need for a dictionary in English, not quite so difficult to understand as, for example, the Concise Oxford, because Concise Oxford dictionary definitions are for people who have English as a mother tongue, very concise, and arranged in a whole long string of words without any divisions.
Yeah.
And so I thought that if I could write a definition which was easier to understand, well, then that would help the student of English in Japan. So I try to give definitions which would be like those that I would give in the classroom. Somebody says, what does this word mean? Mm. And I would answer, well, spontaneously, without thinking very much about exactness, but it gave a definition that was easy to understand for my pupils.
Right.
And so when I wrote the dictionary, I decided that that kind of definition was what was useful to them. And then I wanted to put in a lot of syntax, because if you're going to use English, it's not enough just to know the word and its spelling and its meaning and its pronunciation. You must know how to use it, how it fits into the sentence, the sentence pattern.
Yeah.
And so the sentence patterns were new, I think, a new feature of dictionaries.
Yes.
And then we had to give information about whether a noun, for example, was countable or uncountable.
Yes.
That is never given in an English dictionary for English people. No. They know.
But a Japanese
student might not be quite sure whether he could say furniture is plural. Well, he can't. It's all singular. And so on. Well, that was
nowadays, all the English-Japanese dictionaries in Japan, published in Japan, adopt that system, UNC.
Yes.
Countable and uncountable.
Yes.
You started. Yes.
Well, I'm glad to know that my initiative has been helpful to other people.
Yes. And, how long did it take you to finish the word dictionary?
Well, I worked usually during the long summer holidays. Yes. I used to take a cottage in Karawazawa and take up all material there. And then I did more work during the Christmas holidays and the spring holidays, and Gayton Bean Wakeley did the same.
Mm-hmm.
I think it must have taken about 3 years to prepare the manuscript copy.
I see. Uh-huh.
And then I forget how long it took to produce the volume, mm-hmm. because your Japanese printers in those days were not so good as now. First proofs were full of printer's errors.
But
I'm sure you do much better work today with your printers.
Where was Mr. Gatenby teaching there at that time?
He was at Sendai, the university, and at the high school.
I see. Sendai and Fukushima Higher Commercial School.
Yes.
If I understand right.
Sendai University and the Fukushima High School.
And
Wakefield?
Wakefield, yes.
He was teaching in Tokyo. He was at the Piers School, and I think at two or three other schools, but I forget which now.
Uh-huh. Well... Some years before the outbreak of the World War II, we English teachers of Japan had a very hard time of it. Would you please tell me some of the unpleasant experiences, if you had any?
I don't think I had any unpleasant experiences at all. We had an anxious time because we knew that perhaps war would come and that war would be a great disruption to our lives. But my Japanese colleagues and my students were very, very kind to me during that period, and they tried to allay my anxieties.
Yes.
And even after Pearl Harbor, they were very kind to me until the time when I was able to leave on the ship with the ambassador.
Yeah, I see. So the student didn't protest against
they treated me with very great courtesy.
Oh, yes.
They were very polite students in those days.
Very glad to hear that. I understand that you have visited the USSR, the Soviet Russia, and many other foreign countries. Would you please make some comment on some of the methods used there?
Well, I have been to many parts of Eastern Europe and, of course, to many countries all over the world since I left Japan, lecturing for the British Council. My visit to the Soviet Union was really a holiday for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But...
That's 3 years ago?
It was about 3 years ago, yes. And I went there as a tourist.
Yeah.
But my dictionary and Guide to Patterns are known in Eastern Europe. The Guide to Patterns was printed in a Russian translation in Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
And the dictionary had been sold there from a reprint in Warsaw. So when I got an in-tourist guide, he was usually a university student who spoke English, these guides at once recognized my name, and they invited me to go to the faculties of the universities in Kiev and Leningrad and other places where I met the teachers of English in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very much surprised to see how familiar they were with the work of Palmer.
Yes.
Palmer's work is very widely known in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And
your work, too.
Well, my work, too, I suppose so. But they were always familiar with Palmer's books and his work.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing what they could to follow his theories and practices. The Russians today are very up-to-date.
Mm.
They may not travel abroad very much, but they keep themselves very well informed of the latest work in linguistics everywhere.
Yes.
And they do very good teaching indeed.
Did they have any particular method different from ours or from the methods of, adopted in other countries?
Well, I wasn't able to see a great deal of the work because it was a summer vacation time, so I didn't get into classes.
Ah.
But I was aware that they laid very great stress indeed upon oral work.
Yes. Uh-huh.
The basis of their work was oral.
Yes, I see.
And that, of course, is very important. Mm-hmm. If the teachers are qualified for oral work, and the Russian teachers were, they were very fluent in English.
I see.
It is extraordinary, but they can produce teachers who speak very fluent English
mm-hmm.
and yet never go outside their own country. That was a great feature of their work, I thought. Very impressive.
Listen to us, Japanese teachers of English. What advances have been made in the field of teaching English in recent years? Tell me something about recent development or advances.
Well, as you know, of course, the linguists, both in the United States and in Europe, have been writing a very large number of impressive books.
Yes.
But I don't think that the work of the linguists has got through to the schools yet.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody has to examine the work of the big linguists, study their work, and find out what features can be dealt with at school level.
Mm-hmm.
And that is being done gradually. I am trying to do it myself by interpreting the work of the linguists at a practical level. And then, of course, there has been the immense influence of audiovisual aids and the language laboratories.
Yes.
They are having a great influence today, the use of television and radio for teaching languages.
Yes.
All of these things are a very great help.
Yes.
We mustn't exaggerate them, though. Nothing can take the place of the teacher in the classroom.
Yes.
It's good.
Yes. At the Modern Language Seminar held in Sydney, in the topic session I said, aids are but aids. They can't replace teachers.
That's right.
Aids are very important, but they can't replace teachers.
You're quite
teachers
right.
Teachers are more important and always important. Is there any difference between the method used in the United States and the United Kingdom? Generally, more or less the same, I think, but some conspicuous difference, or is there any difference, or no difference at all?
Well, I think in both the United States and in Britain, language teaching faces the big problem that we haven't enough incentives.
Mm-hmm.
Because children in Britain and in the United States know that wherever they go in the world, they can get by using English.
Yes.
And that makes them rather indifferent to language teaching.
Yes. Uh-huh.
But reading has been stressed too much. Mm-hmm. Today we are trying to do more oral work in England.
Yes.
And today we're making experiments teaching French and German to very young children indeed. And that is very promising indeed.
I see.
Starting at the age of 6 or 7 years old.
I see. From the family school.
Yes.
My impression is that the American method is more or less mechanical, more mechanical anyway than the British way.
Well, you probably know better than I do, because I haven't been in American schools.
No. Do you have some personal reminiscences relating to Dr. Palmer before or after the war, when you were with him here, or after you went back to England and after Palmer went back to England? You met him in England?
Met him in England after the war. He was a great enthusiast. If he got a new idea, he would work at it endlessly until he thought he had found the solution to the problem.
Yes.
And when he was working on syntax and sentence patterns, that fascinated him indeed.
Yes.
And he worked out all sorts of ideas on paper, designs for a railway system, for example, which would illustrate every kind of sentence in English. All sorts of loop lines. For a loop line for the infinitive, a loop line for the gerund, a loop line for the past participle. And you could start on one end of a system and go all round these loops and come back for any kind of sentence. And when he got back to England, he had a house in the country, and he actually built a model railway in his garden with Japanese landscaping round it for these sentences which went round the railway tracks.
Surprise, So that is the syntactic railway system.
Yes, you can see it in one of his books, the New Method Grammar, it's illustrated in that book, New Method Grammar.
And you had seen that?
Yes, I saw that railway.
Oh, I see.
There were no trains on the track, just the track.
Mm-hmm. Do you recommend some particular method? You have some particular method in mind to recommend to the teachers of English in Japan, especially?
Well, I often say that any method of teaching will be successful if you have an enthusiastic teacher who knows English.
Mm-hmm.
You can be successful with any method.
Mm-hmm. That is very important, knows English.
Yes. But, of course, if the teacher doesn't know English well, he will not get success, he won't get results. Whatever method he uses, the teacher is more important than the method. But if we want to recommend a method, I would always recommend a large proportion of oral work. And that oral work should be based upon activity.
Mm-hmm.
And the activity must represent a situation. So I would say I recommend an oral method based on activity and a situational method.
Mm-hmm.
So that when the pupils are talking, they are doing things that they are talking about. Mm. Or they are talking about something that is being done in a story they are reading or pictures they are looking at. I think the mechanical repetition of patterns may be useful at a later stage, but not as a method of teaching. You don't learn to use a pattern through mechanical repetition of the patterns.
Mm-hmm.
But you can use those patterns at a later stage once you have mastered it. When you have mastered the pattern through use.
Yes.
In association with activity, in association with a situation.
Not at the initial stage.
No, not in the abstract, no. Patterns in the abstract would be rather dull to start with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think every new item in language must be associated with activity or the situation in the first place. Not with mere sentences which are irrelevant, which are not continuous even. Each sentence in a pattern should be related to the same situation, not a change of pattern, not a change of situation with every pattern.
Yeah.
That is my quarrel, perhaps, with some of the American
systems.
A little bit too mechanical. Not enough.
May I call a method situational method or something like that?
Situational method is a description of one of the things that I favor, certainly.
Or semantic, method?
Not semantic, no. They will learn.
Situational method.
They will learn to the meanings of words through association.
Mm-hmm.
That is the semantic aspect.
The situational method is the nearest expression.
Yes.
Now, is there any book on English teaching you'd like to recommend to Japanese teachers of English?
Well, I should say that they could, with great advantage, go back to some of the older books, like Jespersen's How to Teach a Foreign Language, and Sweet's book on teaching languages, some of
Palmer's
books. They are very good for theory. The modern books on linguistics are not for the ordinary teacher. They're for the specialist. And if the ordinary teacher starts reading books on linguistics, he will probably get confused. Perhaps I'm wronging the Japanese teacher. Perhaps he would understand them. But I think the simpler books are better for him.
Yes.
And practical books, if I may mention my own, my little books on how to teach structured words and sentence patterns.
Yes.
They're written especially for teachers. They're practical
books.
That
is very, very valuable advice to Japanese teachers in English, eh? They are they're likely to read some difficult books or in a specific field, you know.
Well, the people in the universities could read those books and then interpret those books at the right level for the teacher in the lower schools.
Now, what do you think about, this is broadcasting from NHK, what do you think about the development of audio-visual aids, radio and television and tape recorders and so on and so forth, kind of audio-visual aids?
Well, I'm sure they can be very, very helpful indeed to the learner, especially to the enthusiastic learner. If the learner is really enthusiastic, he will listen and he will watch.
Mm-hmm.
If he's not enthusiastic, he won't listen, he won't watch. He'll go out and play baseball or go to the cinema or watch the TV.
The point is how enthusiastic the students are.
Yes, but there must be many who appreciate very much the work that you are doing, for example.
Thank you very much.
And adult learners who don't go to school, well, they can benefit very much.
Well, in this connection, if I understand rightly, you have had a direct or indirect connection with the BBC. Is that right?
Yes. You know that the BBC has what we call the World Service.
Mm-hmm.
It goes out all over the world. And a feature of that World Service is called English by Radio.
Yes.
Because we in Britain have been teaching the world English for very, very many years.
Yes.
Teaching in Africa and India during the last century. We continue to teach the world English. We try to, anyway.
Yeah.
And English by Radio programs include many that I worked on. Sometimes I wrote the scripts, and the work was done in the studio by other voices. Sometimes I broadcast myself.
Yourself, yes.
And most of these scripts and recordings were available on transcription discs or transcription tapes, which were sent out from London to broadcasting stations all over the world and then rebroadcast.
Do you think they are obtainable here in Japan at bookshops or...?
I don't know whether they are obtainable in the bookshops, but information about them can be obtained from British Information Services or British Council.
Yeah, this is Council.
And the discs are certainly available if anybody arranges to import them.
I hope it's not so expensive.
That depends upon whether your government puts a tax on them or not. They're cheap enough in London, but sometimes things like that get heavy taxes, don't they? Import taxes.
I also remember that you broadcast from NHK, from this station there, Radio Tokyo, didn't you?
Not from this magnificent building.
No.
But from another building, not the magnificent
building. But in those days, that was a magnificent building.
Yes.
You would say
And I used to broadcast English lessons very early in the morning, I think, 7 a.m., with Eiichiro Hori, who was a very, very good friend of mine.
Yes. A very old man. The Professor Keio University.
Yes. Yes, I liked him very much. He was one of my best friends in Turkey, and we used to get up very early and broadcast together.
Yes.
And I remember when I came out of the studios every morning, all the staff would be out there doing physical exercise.
Regular exercise.
Do you do that today?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Even today, yes. Radio Taifa has a very long history.
Yes.
Well, would you give us some hints and suggestions for the future of English teaching in Japan?
Well, I really don't know enough about present-day conditions to give advice. It would be presumptuous for somebody who's been away from Japan such a long time to advise you. Generally,
a long time, over 10 years, and you know...
Yes. But generally speaking, I think the chief emphasis must be placed upon teacher training.
Yes.
It's no good having wonderful textbooks, wonderful aides, unless
you have
teachers who are really good, who know English well, who speak English well. And from my experience in some countries, I would say teachers who have economic security. Because if a teacher has to work at 3 or 4 jobs in order to live securely, then he has no time to prepare lessons, to mark papers and so on. Perhaps that's presumption.
Government must pay more.
Well, I didn't say that. I said a teacher
should
have...
The teachers are most poorly paid.
I said a teacher should have economic security so that he doesn't have to overwork.
Yeah.
And if he overworks, he can't be a good teacher.
Mm-hmm.
That's simple, I think, in any country.
Before concluding this evening's talk, Mr. Hornby, would you like to say something to your old colleagues and friends who may be listening this evening?
Well, this is a wonderful opportunity indeed, and thank you for letting me have this opportunity. I'm sure that I have friends everywhere in Japan because my students in Oita and those in Tokyo must be occupying important positions in industry and commerce everywhere and in the ministries.
Sure, yeah.
And I would like to say to them how pleased I am to be back in Japan again. I wish I could see all of them, but I know that's impossible. There must be thousands and thousands, and they're very widely scattered. But would they please accept my very best wishes for the future and tell them that they are still remembered by their former teacher?
Well, time is almost up. What are your future plans? Or what are you doing now? Doing nothing? I don't think so. You must...
I'm not an old man yet. In fact, I feel younger every year. I'm 71.
Yeah, 71.
And I'm not going to stop working entirely, but I'm not going to work so hard.
Mm-hmm.
I have to keep my dictionaries up to date.
Yes.
Every few years, there's a new edition.
Yes.
And when we have a new edition, we have to keep it up to date, put in the new words, and improve it in various ways. And then at home, I have a large garden, and I'm very fond of gardening. I work in my garden.
Yes.
Perhaps that keeps me well.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I hope you have some good exercise, too.
Yes, me, too, yes. I wish you success, and I've had a very good time this evening. Thank you very much indeed.
Well, thank you.
And I hope your stay in Japan will be a pleasant one.
Thank you, Mr. Ogawa. I'm sure it will. I have so many friends here.
今夜はこのほど来日されたイギリスの英語教育学者 A.S. ホーンビーさんにお話を伺いました。お相手は前の東京外国語大学学長の小川義雄さんでした。イングリッシュアワーを終わります。